Remember how excited I was to talk about August TV? I'm still that excited. Have you seen The Sandman on Netflix? Have you watched Blackbird over on Apple TV Plus? Have you seen Surface over on Apple TV Plus? Did you know that Industry on HBO Max is back and even better than season one? We have so much to talk about today, including Prey, the movie that was out on Hulu that was released last Friday. It's a prequel to Predator. And Reservation Dogs season two is now out. And Atlanta season four is bringing up a lot of controversy. All of that and more coming up on this show. But first. Hey, everybody, welcome back to What's Streaming. My name is Eason, and this is the show where we talk about your favorite things to watch on our favorite streaming apps like Apple TV Plus, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime Video, and Paramount Plus. See, I got them all in there. But before we get started talking about our favorite things to watch on streaming apps, let's talk about what's happening in the box office. For the week of August the 5th through the 11th, Bullet Train, starring Brad Pitt, was the number one movie of the week, grossing about $38 million. DC League of Super Pets coming in at number two. Jordan Peele's Nope coming in at number three. Thor, Love and Thunder coming in at number four. Number five is Minions, Rise of the Guru. Number six, still in the top 10, is Top Gun Maverick. Top Gun Maverick is still doing really well. I've still not yet seen it. Boo Easton. Number seven is Where the Crawdads Sing. This was a really hotly anticipated movie. The film stars Daisy Edgar Jones, Taylor John Smith, and Harry Dickinson. The movie is about a young woman raised in the Deep South who... The film is about a woman who raised herself in the marshes of the Deep South who becomes a suspect in the murder of the man she was once involved with. Number eight is Easter Sunday, starring Joe Coy. It's all about a Filipino family who gathers to celebrate Easter Sunday. It's a comedy based on Joe Coy's life experiences and stand-up comedy. Number nine is Jurassic World Dominion. And number 10 is Vengeance. Vengeance is about a writer from New York City who attempts to solve the murder of a girl he hooked up with and travels down south to investigate the circumstances of her death and discover what happened to her. The Focus Features film stars BJ Novak in the lead. It's a comedy slash mystery slash theater. It's also directed by BJ Novak. And you know who is the composer for the film's music? For the score, rather? Phineas O'Connell, everybody. And that is the top 10. I can tell you that of the top 10 movies, all these are really good. It's been a good summer for movies. The Bullet Train movie hasn't gotten the best reviews, but it does star Brad Pitt. So, you know, people are in. It's an action comedy thriller. Five assassins aboard a fast-moving bullet train find out their missions and have something in common. The film stars Brad Pitt, Joey King, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Brian Tyree Henry, Andrew Koji, Michael Shannon, Hiroyuki Sanada, Sandra Bullock, Bad Bunny, hey. Yeah. I think the movie is originally based on a Korean film that somebody Americanized. Yeah. I mean, I think Korean cinema stands on its own. Maybe we didn't need to redo this, but hey, if people went to the movies to see it, who am I? Okay, watching television this week has been such a delight. And I could still be on this high based on the last program that I watched because it was so good. But I do feel like this month is rolling into all of the really good stuff we're excited for in the fall, right? People are foaming at the mouth for House of Dragon. People are foaming at the mouth for Lord of the Rings. We also know that the Wheel of Time, which I also believe will be back. I could be wrong. I do think that the Wheel of Time on Amazon will also be back this fall. I'm excited. I like the big epic fantasy series. I think we all do. But before we're all glued to our chairs discussing House of the Dragon 8,000 ways on social and Lord of the Rings 8,000 ways on social, let's talk about a few things we've seen already. Let's talk about a few things that have been out this summer that we can chat about now. First off, Apple TV released Surface, starring Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who I absolutely adore. She was in A Wrinkle in Time, you know, with Oprah and Mindy Kaling and Reese Witherspoon. It was not a very good movie, but she was an awesome bright spot and shining star in it. She was great. She was also in the Emmy-nominated Black Mirror episode, San Junipero, you know, where they're jumping through time. She was absolutely amazing. Loved her in that with Yorkie. Remember Yorkie, who was afraid to fall in love and to be herself? We all love nostalgia, don't we? So Surface is about a woman in San Francisco in therapy trying to recover her memories after a traumatic brain injury. Her therapist tells her that she tried to commit suicide and that the trauma of everything that led up to this is the reason that she can't remember. And of course, our main character starts to remember bits and pieces. And as audience members, we start to suspect that everyone she engages with may not really be who they say they are, including her husband. Let me just say that Gugu Mbatha-Raw is the best thing about Surface. You know, Apple TV has done a really good job of curating really good content. And, you know, they did a great job casting Gugu Mbatha-Raw in the lead. But I am so bored with this script. And if I see another scene with Gugu Mbatha-Raw running up and down the hills of San Francisco, these streets, right? You know, the streets go up and down. If I see another shot of her running to the pier, I'm going to lose it. I'm bored with the husband. I'm bored with the friends. But I keep watching because she does such a stellar job. And I'm not the only person who thinks this. In fact, let's go to IMDb and read a couple of the reviews. This person gave it a 6 out of 10. Hey, Amy925. This isn't terrible, but also not great, and certainly not original. In fact, you'll probably have the story figured out within the first few minutes. I didn't have it figured out within the first few minutes, but by episode 2, I think I'd figured it out. But if you have nothing else to watch, I can think of a lot of worse options out there. Like anything on broadcast channels, For All Mankind and Invasion come to mind. This person and I think a lot alike. What I do recommend on Apple is Severance, Blackbird, Defending Jacob, Foundation, C, Ted Lasso, Servant, The Morning Show, and Prehistoric Planet. See, this person and I, we agree. 6 out of 10. I might also give Surface a 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10. Maybe I gave it a 7 out of 10 because I like Gugu Mbatha-Raw. And I don't mean as in I think that the show alone gets a 7 because of her. I mean that she's basically carrying the series. We've got the great backdrop of San Francisco. We've got a semi-interesting story. I want to see how she's putting these memories back together. She also goes through, you know, these kinds of new age therapies to try to recover her memories. That's kind of cool. I want to see that. Also, can we talk about her therapist? So I do love that she's a black woman with a black therapist. I know we don't have to have matching race therapists, but you know, sometimes when you have a therapist, you want your therapist to, you want to be able to relate. I have a gay therapist. Hey. Marianne Jean-Baptiste plays Hannah, the therapist, who I want to reach through the television and knock the tissues off the table in the therapist office. Yeah. I want a therapist that push back, but I don't want a therapist questioning my sanity. Although I guess that's low-key her job, right? Yeah, shout out to Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who plays Hannah. She does a great job. But by episode 5, I'm mad. I'm like, wait, the therapist is not going to question when I start to get my memories back whether or not it's my traumatic brain injury or if I really remember this. You're going to go with it. Yeah, it's good. And then all the things that, you know, these days that make us want to scream like a damn conservatorship. Yeah, that's a part of it, right? We're all triggered because of Britney. People deserve to be in control of their own lives. Also, who can you trust? Who can you trust? Especially when you don't have your memories. So it brings up a lot of really interesting questions. You know, I'll say this about the television that I'm mentioning today and TV in general that reminds me of college and graduate school and why we have entire university coursework departments, etc., dedicated to studying film and characters. There's so much to explore. You know, on a psychological level, on a social level, there are so many themes that rear their head. Client-patient relationship, mental health, Black women engaging with their mental health providers and medical providers, trust in marriage, infidelity, friendship, kinship, San Francisco. Hey. Yeah, I like Surface. I would recommend, if on a Sunday evening, if you have a glass of wine you want to watch, yeah, put your feet up. It's not too intense. And again, you'll probably figure it out. Yeah, I liked it. 6 out of 10. These reviewers were spot on, in my opinion. In my opinion, they were spot on. In my opinion, these reviewers were spot on. Have you watched The Sandman by Neil Gaiman yet over on Netflix? If you have not watched this series, dive right in. And let me help you out. If you saw the preview and you thought, that looks a little hokey for me, or I don't really like fantasy, it is much more involved than I feel like the trailer presents. If you've seen other Neil Gaiman projects, you may think, ooh, this is going to be out there. Neil Gaiman wrote Lucifer, you know, the same one over on Netflix. He also wrote American Gods, which was over on Stars. He also wrote Good Omens over on Prime Video. Neil Gaiman is an author who has done so many things that are in our cultural conscience that really, really make you think. And let me tell you, this series is so good that it has made me, down to my core, think about the kinds of themes and parts of the human experience that one could discuss in an academic setting. There is existentialism. There is the hero's quest. There is love. There is loss. There is the human experience over time. You know, when you watch a capsule episode of TV and you're so moved by that capsule episode, by the performance, or what that means, the character's growth, their experience, And that's really how I felt when I watched episode 6 of The Sandman, which I won't give away, but you've got to watch. There is a lot of the human experience that happens from a particular character over 8 centuries. Yeah, I like it when you get to watch the human experience evolve over several centuries. That's kind of like what we liked about San Junipero. That was, of course, jumping through decades. But, you know, we know that the human experience changes. Our social experiences change by decades. And, man, over centuries, so much happened. Episode 6, you'll remember it and thank me. So what is this story about? This story is about a god-like character who oversees dreams. And he's imprisoned by an occultist for 100 years. And lots of things happen. All of his life tools are taken from him, and he's on a quest to get them back. And in the midst of this, we get to see the lives of the people who come into contact with these objects and other people who kind of get roped into this world. And Tom Sturge leads this. He is really good, gothic, and scary character. I love the diversity in all of Gaiman's work. You know, the English tend to be better at this than Americans. You know, you watch a good English show, like with fantasy, all the fairies aren't white people. That's my assessment. It's good to see people that look like you intelligent. Representation matters. Yeah, this is good. So I like it. It's got, you know, all my favorites. We'll dive in. It's got diversity. It's got a great story. There's character growth. We're not left with silly, ridiculous endings. The pacing is good. The pacing is really good. I didn't fall asleep. I didn't want to fast forward. Yeah, I was drawn in. I like this. And it's very smart. I like intelligent television. You know, they say that Neil Gaiman's work is inspired by his love of C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and Lewis Carroll and Mary Shelley. Gaiman is English. He's born in Portchester, England. Also, I'm nosy. I'm one of those people who likes to read up on an author when I'm looking at their work to see how possibly their experience influences things. Neil Gaiman is divorced and then remarried someone 16 years younger. They had a child. Hung out in New Zealand during the pandemic. This new wife of his identifies as bisexual. Hey. Hey, Amanda Palmer. And there's a lot of, well, there are bisexual characters in these in the series. Sexuality is very fluid in Neil Gaiman's work. I said, is this a gay man? Maybe they just like to have fun. Maybe he's representing everyone. Maybe this is from the team of writers, but this seems to be a recurring theme that sexuality is very fluid in this series. It's fine. And it doesn't distract from anything. You know? We're not distracted by what these characters are doing. They just seem to fall in love and get her done. Also, gay people aren't chopped up on the chopping block like a bad horror movie, so I'm also okay with that too. If we're going to be present, don't take us out too fast. We need our representation. Yeah. I really enjoyed The Sandman. I like the character arcs. This also makes me want to watch more Neil Gaiman programming. And again, if I were a city college instructor or university instructor teaching narrative strategies, or discussing story and characters in someone's film department, I would absolutely use The Sandman. It just reminds me of my favorite episode in a television series. One of my favorite episodes in a television series. Penny Dreadful, Season 2. The Cut Wife. Patti LuPone, Ava Green, and Josh Hartnett, and Helen McCrory, who I just absolutely love. She was a delight. She was the best villain as Madame Collie in Season 2 of Penny Dreadful. But The Cut Wife was so amazing because not only was the story moving, and you know it's Patti LuPone who, like the greats of our time, can steal a scene. You know, they're on like just a couple of minutes and they can, you know, steal the entire scene. You know, I feel that way about Patti LuPone, obviously. I feel that way about James Earl Jones, Denzel Washington. I feel that way about Viola Davis. I feel that way about Alfre Woodard. I feel that way about Donald Sutherland. You know, someone who's on, even if they're on for just a half second, I feel that way about Judi Dench. Someone who comes onto the screen and you're focused and you're paying attention and every single word, you're hanging on to seeing what happens next. Patti LuPone nailed it. And that character's experience is so good. Timothy Dutton was also really good in Penny Dreadful. But let's not take my word for it only. Let's see what people are saying over on IMDb. Let's look at a couple of reviews. The reviews are in. There's 775 reviews, so it's getting a lot of love. People either love it or hate it as I'm looking. Spellbinding and visionary. It's fair to say I've always been somewhat of a fan of distinctively whimsical and quintessential eccentricity imbued with famous author Neil Gaiman's writing. Oh, okay. W011YM Y4M5. Ever since 2011, first being introduced to it as a child in the sixth season of Doctor Who with his critically acclaimed episode, The Doctor's Wife. Okay. It's a credit to all the cast and crew members involved who respectively and lovingly brought such breathtaking universe to life. And I'm hopeful the quality established here in the preliminary chapters will continue throughout. Because from what I've seen, I'm seriously floored. It is utterly remarkable, beautifully dark and haunted, unlike anything I've had the opportunity to previously binge on the streaming service in its history. And there's a palpable sense of history and mythology to which it immediately draws you in, and I cannot wait to see more. What a major achievement. I would agree. Here's another 9 out of 10. So Prejo 19 says, just finished binge watching this last night. Quite a storytelling it was, from magic spells to traveling to hell, from human greed to dream seed, from dark adventures to realm contender, you name it. But my favorite episode was the 6th. Oh my goodness, we share that in common. This person also likes the 6th episode, The Sound of Her Wings. It really gave the surreal drama feel. No thriller, no horror, no suspense, just gliding the dream. And by the way, who's the Lord of Dreams barber? Because he changed his hairstyle every century or so. I hope they make an episode of his barber next season. Tom Sturridge does have good hair. Costuming is great too. Let me also point out in this series that the other main character is a young lady, one of many main characters, Vanessa Simonyi. She plays Rose Walker. Vanessa Simonyi is new Oh, this is her first starring role. She was great. I like her. There's not much information about her in IMDb, but she was good to play opposite Tom Sturge. I like this. If you have not watched The Sandman yet, jump right on in. Not only is it entertaining, I've not read any of the comics, so I'm not one of those comic book purist or book purist. You know how that goes on this show. I'm not. But because as we know, comic books and graphic novels and books are all different media. And so translating them onto screen or adapting them onto screen, adaptations are difficult. But people seem to like this. I'm with it. I like this. I hope that there is, you know, several seasons after this, at least a season two. Good job, Netflix. Good job, Neil Gaiman. Good job, Tom Sturge, the whole cast and crew. This was good. You should absolutely watch The Sandman over on Netflix. And I'm going to be looking out for Neil Gaiman at a Comic-Con. You know, Comic-Con's right down in San Diego. If he shows up, I'm going to go down and get a book signed or a t-shirt signed or show up to a screening. Did you ever go to any of those local screenings? If they offer them in your area, perhaps I've just reminded you, check them out, where a screenwriter comes to town and they show a film at your college or university in your area. And the filmmakers or directors or writers or actors all show up on a panel and they talk about it. This happens all the time here in Los Angeles. This happens a lot at comic conventions, especially, you know, with these fantasy television shows based on graphic novels and books and comic books. I would be excited to meet Neil Gaiman. Hopefully he's not crazy. You know, that's the one thing about getting hyped about meeting your favorite. Sometimes when you meet people who you're excited about their work, you meet them and they're crazy. I've not heard that about him, but it would be disappointing because his body of work is so good. Here's a good story. For a time, I had an office at a co-working space at WeWork. Are you familiar with WeWork? You may have seen the WeWork TV series over on Hulu, starring Anne Hathaway and Jared Leto as Adam Newman and Rebecca Paltrow Newman. Anywho, while I was there, there was a gentleman whose office was being repaired. And he was a composer, songwriter, producer. And I don't mean like a hip-hop producer or composer. I mean like ballads and love songs. And one of my very first jobs is in a music store. And before Shazam, as I'm dating myself, Shazam came out while I worked at the music store, so I'm not that old. But before Shazam, we used to look in these big books in the center of the store to try to figure out the name of the song and the artist so that we'd go and get your CD so that you could listen to the CD before you purchased it. Anywho, I became very familiar with a lot of artists, and I also became very familiar with a lot of songwriters from looking in this book. And one of those great songwriters was Diane Warren. Diane Warren has had a long, and Diane Warren has been a hit maker for a long time. She's written lots of songs for all kinds of artists, from Celine Dion to Al Green to Gloria Estefan to Monica to Whitney Houston, Rod Stewart, Leanne Rimes, Brandy. She wrote Have You Ever by Brandy. She wrote Because You Love Me by Celine Dion, Mariah Carey, Mary J. Blige, Edwin McCain. You guys get it, Christina Aguilera. So you guys know that Diane Warren is serious business. I was extremely ecstatic to hear when I asked him. I said, well, have you met some of the greats? Max Martin, Walter Afanasieff, Diane Warren. And he said, I have met Diane Warren. And he said, I was super excited to meet her. And She was terrible. He said she was not a very nice person. She was very standoffish. And sometimes, right, we know that people have a bad day. I think I've mentioned this on this show before. I've got a friend who's an actor who is always very conscious of engaging with fans when he's out in the public, even when he's having a bad day, because, you know, everybody has a bad day, but you don't want that bad day to follow you on the internet forever. And so I asked, I said, well, it sounds like she wasn't very nice. Did you engage with her on multiple occasions? He said, yes. He said he liked her assistant. Loved the assistant is what he said. But Diane Warren, not so much. That was a real letdown. She's done so much great work. I mean, even if you look at her Wikipedia, she's had her hand in everything, and she's been writing for, you know, the better part of 3 decades. If you've also paid any attention to the news, you may have also seen Diane Warren's name come up recently because Beyonce's album, which was released recently, there were 26 songwriters listed on a song. And Diane Warren sarcastically wrote a tweet saying something to the effect of, how do you have 26 writers on a song? I guess Diane didn't know that there was a beehive out there, and the beehive went in on Diane Warren. The beehive reminded Diane that she's never won a Grammy, even though she's been nominated 15 times. Ouch. She's also got a short haircut that's dark, you know, Pat Benatar-ish. Someone said she looked like Ghislaine Maxwell. People are so damn evil. Ultimately, after the 3,500 comments going back and forth with Diane, who just didn't know when to take a step back, she apologized. She said she didn't mean to offend or imply that she was talking about Beyonce. Yeah, girl, yes, you were. Maybe that was karma. You know, for being mean to my old colleague at WeWork. But anywho, to my point, like JoJo Sawa also mentioned about meeting Candace Cameron Bure, and she wasn't nice when she was a kid. Those bad experiences stick with you. Be nice to people in the mean streets. Also, don't go up to people when they're having dinner. Let people have dinner with their family and friends. Don't grab onto their wife. Like, remember in the airport we saw a month ago when the weirdo paparazzi plus bizarre fans were taking photos of Tom and Rita Hanks dashing through the airport, and someone knocked her over, and there's Tom Hanks yelling about knocking over his damn wife. Yeah. Leave these people alone. They're doing a job. Glad you get to see it. Let people go about their way. And do it in the right setting so that you'll be less disappointed if they turn out to not be so good. There are people that I've met that I don't think are very nice either, but they're people I wouldn't talk to on the street or see. When I was doing a gig for WSVN in Miami, they have an entertainment news program, and they would send, like, you know, the interns and the freelancers out to cover events that the producers didn't want to. You know, they're busy. It's Miami. And I was covering an event, and Wendy Williams was there. She was awesome and great to meet. Wendy was at her peak back then. Keisha Cole, was not nice. If I never met her again, never. It would be too soon. She was rude. I was young too, like excited. You know, you ask the questions when they send out the release for whatever event they're doing, and you stop them before they go on stage. Hey there, Keish. Super excited. Glad to see that you're out here at this event tonight. Can we see another season of your show on BET? I think she said something to the effect of, "We'll see." Excuse me? Girl, I wasn't checking for you when I got here in the first place. I'm definitely not checking for you now. And then I think another like B-lister, C-lister, Bobby Valentino was there. He was cool. No, he wasn't. Let me take that back. Bobby Valentino's people did not want to interview because they said he wanted to interview after he did the show. Wasn't waiting on that. There was a Heat game to go to, if I'm not mistaken. Out. Time passes quickly. Can we talk about a little bit of controversy? Okay, so the FX series Atlanta, written and created by Donald and Stephen Glover, just released their fourth and final season trailer earlier this month. Now, the show has been extremely popular, especially on the internet and with the Black community. And a lot of people were not really feeling the last season. Season three was a huge departure from the first two seasons, where we got to know these struggling young Black people on their way up in Atlanta in their careers and personal relationships. And it really explored, you know, family, friendship, you know, relationships, etc. And the third season was a huge departure from this. It was almost Twilight Zone-ish. And a lot of people were not feeling it. So when this new trailer dropped, people were very vocal about it online. And Donald Glover had a response. He said, "To be real, if you're online, everybody's going to have an agenda on some level. It would be silly to say that sometimes what people say doesn't affect you, because especially being Black, I feel like a lot of Black criticism bothers me only because it sounds like it's from Black people who don't really know what we've been through. I don't think they give a lot of credit to what we've gone through." I assume this means the producing team and the group of Black people it took to make this series and get it over onto FX. I respect that. So to be like, "Oh, these Black people hate Black people," or "these Black people hate Black women," because that was a part of the criticism. Like, each one of the episodes in season three were capsule episodes that didn't really mirror what we saw, as I mentioned earlier, about the life struggles of these characters. They were really sort of warning label capsule episodes to white people. And what I mean by that is they highlighted very specific cultural moments that were kind of Twilight Zone-ish. There was an episode, for instance, with a Black kid who is a middle schooler who is abused at home. And when the DCSF people come to investigate, he is removed from the home and placed with a white lesbian foster family. And it mirrors the situation of the Harts, the lesbian couple who adopted the six Black children up in Oregon and eventually drove their car off a cliff in California after the Department of Children and Family Services from Washington State and Oregon were fast onto their tails because they had been reported for starving the children and abusing them. Well, to the Atlanta audience, the core audience, what were they saying to Black people with this story? Why do we need it? The show and creator and musical artist went on to say that he might be through with the culture and said that he feels as if a lot of the criticism is coming from internet people trying to get hot. What does that mean, Donald? You can't take criticism? If your core audience is telling you that they're not feeling this art house departure, which it was, listen to your core audience. He says, quote, "I kind of feel like I'm a little through with the culture personally. I do a lot of shit for the people, but the culture, I think at this point, I think a lot of us are sitting here being like, yo, a lot of this shit was learned because of fucked up shit that happened to us, and we actually have to relearn a lot of stuff. So if you're sitting there being like, this is my misogynoir, I'm wondering why you think that and why you think I feel that way when I'm nothing without my people. It's just kind of whack to me. Some of that to me is just the internet trying to get hot, which is also something we learned in the system we're in. No, I think, Donald, that you're annoyed by valid criticism. You can be annoyed by valid criticism. It doesn't mean that you have to take people's advice. Politicians do it all the time, right? We regularly express our criticism of our elected officials regularly when they don't vote the way the majority of their constituencies would prefer them to. But that's politics. The same is true with television. Look, I fell in love with Atlanta, binge watching the first two seasons. And, you know, while I appreciate all kinds of television, art house included, it was a dramatic departure from the first two seasons. And I could see why the core audience would be annoyed. We want to see the main characters on their come up. We want to see the good things that happen to them. We want to see what they've learned. We want to see these great character arcs. And we really didn't get the opportunity to see those with a lot of the stuff in season three. Hopefully, season four, I'm going to support the show. I'm going to watch to the end. I like Donald and Stephen Glover. I think they've done a great thing. I want to support the cast. Let's see. I've really come to like Lakeith Stanfield a lot. Chris Davis has really grown on me. Zazie Beetz. Brian Tyree Henry is Paperboy. Yeah, the core audience has been so good. I mean, the core characters have been great. So any departure from not seeing them grow just is kind of annoying. But we'll see. And speaking of FX, by the way, the second season of Reservation Dogs is out. Reservation Dogs is about a group of friends that live on a reservation in Oklahoma. They're teenagers. And it is a coming of age series. And I'll say that it's a dramedy because it's comedic, but it's also dramatic. So they deal with love. They deal with loss. The series is executive produced and created by Sterling Harjo and Taika Waititi. And an all indigenous cast, which is great. These kids are good. I love the representation. You know how I feel about that, guys. And I also like the realness, right? Like the experiences that broke people have, the experiences that people that have families that are not perfect encounter, the kinds of experiences that you have when you're young and you want to get away from poverty and hopelessness or drama or a death or tragedy or, you know, all kinds of things. You know, the things that make us, that make our experiences uniquely American in so many ways. And especially for Native kids here on a reservation in Eastern Oklahoma. Can I just say in season two, I love already, it's already started, it's already good. In season two, there is a capsule episode with a couple of the girls and I love. You'll remember this when you see this. This doesn't give anything away. But there's a moment where this woman they encounter, she's a white woman, and she wants to say grace. She goes into this prayer. And for me, I'm immediately, and the writers did such a great job because it was immediately emotionally evocative. For me, I'm freaking out. I'm like, are these Native kids Christian? Like, dude, what is this white woman doing? She's like, let's link arms and talk to Jesus. And opposite this is a scene with another group of the kids and their uncle, their uncles, and they're talking to the creator in their own way. And the juxtaposition between the Christian prayer and the Native men talking to the creator and the earth. I mean, it's just, it's so good. Yeah. Shout out to Sterling Harjo and Taika Waititi for putting these Native American teenagers on our screens and giving us the real reel. And you don't have to take my word for it. There are 115 reviews over on IMDb. Here's one. Native here, raised on the res. I won't say this is 100% accurate because obviously it's a caricature in a lot of ways. Yes, because it's a dramedy. But they get so much right, especially the slang. I found it hilarious that the old warrior character truly represents Native humor in a way that I've never really seen before in pop culture. Just really fast, double-barreled, and then suddenly drab. The sets are very close to real life. I watched the first two episodes thinking, I've been there, I've done that. And it's probably the best glimpse into res life since Smoke Signals, which is a huge tip of the cap. Here's another review, 8 out of 10. With the wild Taika Tenge swagger, Reservation Dogs arrives as fully formed concept, giving a sharp caricature of contemporary Native culture with buckets of wit, personality, and sincerity. The whole ensemble here are remarkable, and it feels tremendously fresh in its effort to cram in everything right out of the gate. There are an abnormal amount of bottle episodes that confound the central narrative a little, and something other than comedies may have only felt confident doing in their third or fourth series, but Res Dogs has few contemporaries, and the characters are easily strong enough to make this otherwise alienating move work. It also feels a little breathless with references, but when this is the first proper stab at authentic representation for millions who've been culturally sidelined on TV since the invention of the medium, you can't blame the creative medium for having a lot to say. Legitimately can't wait for more. That was last September. Shout out to Owen Watts. I found that helpful. Yeah, if you slide through these comments and reviews over on IMDb, you know, there is a plethora of 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10s, which says that people really love their representation. I can see that there are a lot of Native Americans who have commented on their own experiences. And that feels good. This feels good. Yeah, watch Reservation Dogs. If you have not seen the series already, there's a full first season that's out. And then I think the first three episodes of the second season are out. And you will be hooked. Closing out the show today, I want to talk about Prey. Prey is the origin story of the predator that starts in the world of the Comanche Nation 300 years ago. Naru, a skilled warrior, fights to protect her tribe against one of the most highly evolved predators to land on Earth. The film stars Amber Midthunder, Dakota Beavers, and Dane DeLiegro as the alien. Let me say this about Prey. I went into this expecting this to be cheesy. It was not. And what I mean by that is, right, like normally this genre, you expect it to be kind of hokey with the monster and no. This was good. Remember, the original Predator had Arnold Schwarzenegger, and there were, you know, three others. Predator, Predators, and Predator 2. This was so good. And what do I mean by it was so good? It was directed by Dan Trachtenberg. And the cinematography is great. It looks like it was shot up in the beautiful outback of Canada somewhere. You know, it gave me like Revenant vibes. Albeit Revenant was supposed to be taking place in Missouri, although I've heard that it's really flat there, so it couldn't have possibly been there. But back to this story. It is a female-driven story. Amber Midthunder and Dakota Beavers, as brother and sister in the series, are remarkable. I feel the chemistry. It's good. The movie is an hour and 39 minutes. I would have loved for it to have been a TV show. Yeah, they could have made this into a TV series. It is the 18th century. And in addition to, you know, all the love between this indigenous community, the colonizers show up. I wasn't expecting that because I was so drawn into the story between this family. But I guess that was obviously a historical reality. I would call this movie historical fiction horror. Is that a new genre? Historical fiction thriller. That was great. Beautifully shot. The horse riding, the skill of the actors, believable. I cared about everyone in the series. It has a 7.2 out of 10 rating over on IMDb. It has a 92% tomato meter over on Rotten Tomatoes and a 79% audience score, which is pretty high. Yeah, it was good. Let's read some of these reviews. We'll start on IMDb. Prey is back to basics, return to form with a tremendous atmosphere and suspense that unfortunately won't be experienced in the theater. Let me say this. I would have also seen this in the theater. This would have been a great theater movie. Trey SM87 says, as a lifelong fan of this franchise, I am admittedly biased. Since the revolutionary classic first film, Fox Hollywood have made four sequels, all of which I have thoroughly enjoyed and still critiqued. A perfect sequel hasn't been made, in my opinion, and may never be, but I can say this new film has the closest effective wilderness ambience and suspense to the first film, and that warrants great praise. I was skeptical with a few things, judging by the trailer, but seeing the final product, I can say that no matter what the logic holds in the mismatch of the Prey versus the Prey, the film is executed quite well. The settings are phenomenal and amplify the overall product. Dan Trachtenberg has a keen eye for detail as seen in 10 Cloverfield Lane. He directed that as well. And it shows again. The costume design captures a completely different time frame awesomely, as well as shows a new, more prehistoric predator that might be the coolest visually yet. The music and sound is crisp and powerful and adds so much. I also said this. I agree that the sound editing in this movie made you feel like you were there. It was so good. I was in. It's a shame that this had to be only streaming, as it should have been in the theater. The scenery is fantastic, but regardless, it's a surprising return to roots as far back to basic setting and suspense aspects. It's another welcome sequel and should have been seen by any Predator fan or action fan. I agree. Here's another one. This was easily the best one since the original, not even close to me. I was hopeful when Shane Black did a reboot in 2018, but I was disappointed. This was taking the franchise back to the basics, and that was a good thing. If you like what Rogue One meant to Star Wars, then this will connect with you. I love the cinematography. It was beautiful. The acting was really good. And don't worry that the lead actors aren't more well-known. I wasn't really expecting much, to be honest, and the sequels since Predator have been letdowns. I only watched it because the trailer had me with taking it so far back in time. At an hour and 40 minutes, it wasn't too short or too long. It was the perfect runtime. I hope that you like Prey as much as me and that you rate and leave a comment. Happy hunting. As I said, you need a Friday night movie. Prey is the movie for you. Shout out to Dan Trachtenberg and Amber Midthunder, Dakota Beavers, Dan DeLiegro, and the crew. They did a great job. I would definitely watch this again. You know, sometimes you watch things, you're like, I watched it, it was okay. I would definitely watch Pray Again. This could be on my queue. Okay. I know I still haven't talked about The Boys this season. I still haven't talked about The Walking Dead spinoff yet. I haven't talked about in that Walking Dead spinoff that Rick and Michonne are going to have like a, I think they said a 6-episode or 7-episode limited series to close up their story arc. And then I think we're going to get the spinoff with Daryl. Norman Reedus gets his own series. Will you watch? Do you care that much about Norman Reedus? I mean, I feel like it's been so long and there's so many spinoffs. But I'll watch Daryl. Yeah, I'm in. I'm here for it. I know a lot of us have been freaking out with all the conversation from David Zavlov, who is the CEO and president of Discovery. And as we know, they purchased the Warner Media content from AT&T, and they're talking about merging HBO Max and HBO into the Discovery Plus app and coming up with a new app, which I think is terrible. HBO and HBO Max with 94 million subscribers, and I think Discovery Plus has 15 million. It's mostly reality TV content over there. I don't know how they're going to merge these two groups because they are definitely different audiences. My suspicion is that they're going to ruin a good thing. Lots of shows have already been canceled, so a lot of people are up in arms over that. I will also say that in addition to shows that have been canceled, we heard that Batgirl was canceled as well, and they're skipping that whole short, limited theatrical release and straight to streaming. He wants to make more money from these big theatrical releases. Now, this all makes sense because Zavlov's huge compensation package is tied to meeting these stock goals. He's got a $246 million compensation package. Yeah, you and I are both poor. $246 million is a lot of money. In 2018 or 19, he made $121 million. He's been the CEO over at Discovery for 15 years. It's wild. It'll be interesting to see how this evolves. My gut tells me that it's not going to end well. This guy's overseen reality TV, not scripted, and it may not work out like he thinks. That is all of the streaming news and conversation I have for you all today. Let's tune in next week to this same lovely podcast where we won't be at yet. Well, we can talk about physical then. I missed out on physical today, but we're only 2 episodes into the new season, so I can deep dive a little further on our next episode. Physicals with Rose Byrne over on Apple TV Plus. It's good. I like it. I also want to take a look at Shining Girls with Elizabeth Moss. That's also on Apple TV Plus. There's a new American Horror Story that'll be out, and some of the old characters, people we haven't seen in several seasons, are coming back. So I'm excited about that. Handmaid's Tale is also coming back. There's so much for us to talk about. All right. My name is Eason, and thank you all for listening to What's Streaming. You can follow me over on TikTok at What's Streaming. You can follow me over on Instagram at What's Streaming Official and at What's Streaming over on Twitter if you've got any comments. All right, guys. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.